The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, I am Avra Lewis for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine.
The first article is titled, More About the Georgia Democratic Candidates. John Ossoff, candidate for U.S. Senate. In 2017, John was the Democratic nominee in the special election for Georgia's 6th District. He entered the race at 29 years old, 6 weeks after Republican Congressman Tom Price had been reelected by 24%. It became the biggest congressional race in American history, which Ossoff narrowly lost by 3% after mobilizing the strongest Democratic special election turnout in over a decade, doubling youth turnout from the 2014 midterm and producing the highest ever turnout for a standalone House special election of all time. With the endorsements of his mentor, Congressman John Lewis, Congressman Hank Johnson, Georgia State Black Caucus Chair Representative Karen Bennett, and dozens of other leaders from around Georgia, Ossoff is challenging Senator David Perdue in 2020. Reverend Raphael Warnock, candidate U.S. Senate. When he enrolled at Morehouse College, Reverend Warnock didn't know how he would pay the full tuition. With the help of low-interest student loans and Pell Grants, Raphael graduated, earned a Ph.D., and was ordained in the ministry. 15 years ago, he was chosen to serve as senior pastor at Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, the former pulpit of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He was the youngest pastor selected to serve in that leadership role at the historic church. Reverend Warnock believes his impact does not stop at the church door and has been an advocate to expand health care coverage and to ensure hardworking Georgians can make a living wage. As Senator, Reverend Warnock will bring to Washington the concerns of struggling Georgia families who wonder why no one is looking out for them. He will focus on fighting for quality, affordable health care, for the dignity of working people who are paid too little as our government works more for Wall Street, and to make sure every voice is heard. The next article is titled, Pregnant Mothers Are Contracting COVID-19 and Dying. Black women in Congress are sounding the alarm about a new CDC report that reveals shockingly high numbers of pregnant women contracting the COVID-19 virus, with dozens of cases proving fatal. Since January, more than 38,000 pregnant women have been diagnosed with COVID-19 in the U.S., and 51 of them have died, according to a Center for Disease Control Morbidity and Mortality Weekly report released this month. The report found that expectant mothers are more likely to be admitted to the intensive care unit, receive invasive ventilation, and are at increased risk of death compared to non-pregnant women. Monday night, on the House of Representatives floor, Representative Alma Adams addressed the crisis and its disproportionate impact on communities that already face racial health disparities. According to 2018 CDC data, between 700 and 900 women lose their lives every year due to pregnancy or birth-related complications. Nationally, Black women are 2.5 times more likely to die from pregnancy-related complications than their white counterparts. What we do know is that before the pandemic, Black and brown mothers were already dying at alarming and unacceptable rates, Adams said, founder and co-chair of the Black Maternal Health Caucus. In particular, Black women from all walks of life were 3 to 4 times more likely to die from pregnancy-related complications than white women. We are facing a crisis within a crisis. Besides Adams, fellow members of the Congressional Black Caucus have been working with stakeholders to develop legislation and plans for eliminating maternal health disparities. Among those tackling this issue are Representative Robin Kelly, Representative Lauren Underwood, Representative Ayanna Pressley, Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, Representative Karen Bass, Chair of the CBC. So is Senator Kamala Harris, the nation's new vice president elect. This summer, Harris and Adams co-sponsored the COVID-19 Bias and Anti-Racism Training Act. The legislation is aimed at ensuring hospitals and healthcare providers involved in COVID-19 testing, treatment, vaccine distribution, and response receive implicit bias training. To date, the measure has been referred to the House Energy and Commerce Committee. In the Senate, the bill has been referred to the HELP Committee. In September, the House passed bipartisan legislation called the Helping Moms Act. It was introduced by Representative Kelly, who serves as the CBC's Health Brain Trust Chairwoman. The bill provides states with the option to extend Medicare coverage through the entire postpartum period of 1 year. Currently, most states only provide Medicaid coverage for 60 days immediately following childbirth. With more than half of new mothers in the country covered by Medicaid, the Helping Moms Act could significantly improve these health outcomes. The measure has been endorsed by more than a dozen health and family advocates, including the American Medical Association, Black Mamas Matter Alliance, Black Women's Health Imperative, and the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. This is a big step toward reducing the tragedy of preventable maternal deaths by ensuring new moms can continue to seek necessary medical care, Kelly told Essence in a statement. This is not a magic pill to solve America's maternal mortality crisis, but this bill provides a solid, bipartisan, evidence-based approach to saving lives. We must continue working inside and outside of government to ensure starting a family doesn't cost a woman her life. The next article is titled, What the 2020 Election Reveals About Democracy in the United States. Unlike some who may be wildly confident about the future of the United States in light of President-elect Joe Biden clawing out a victory over Donald Trump in the 2020 election and the historic ascension of Vice President Kamala Harris, I am cautiously optimistic. You see, a cancer has been festering right under the skin of this nation. Some of us have felt the lumps and aches and pains and experienced the unexplained bruises, while others of us have been able to carry on without the slightest inclination that we are dying on the inside, even as the first group sounds the alarm of our systems. But ignorant or not about the state of our nation, the prognosis is the same for us all. If Americans aren't willing to take a look at all the ways we are being eaten alive by a disease of hate, then there will be no one left standing. This land that has been simultaneously refuge and captor for so many will be no more. And that is wildly alarming. Like many immigrant families that have called the United States home for decades, my family came here in search of a better life. Economic instability, the Duvalier era, corruption, American occupation, and racist policies that prevented Haiti from ever establishing sound economic footing. Penance for Black people who have been enslaved, having the audacity to claim freedom, made for a perfect storm of government collapse. Many Haitians fled. We ran, swam, and flew straight into the arms of the U.S. Yes, the very culprit of so many historic atrocities faced by the island nation. And America wasn't waiting for us with her arms open wide. We had to pry those clamped fingers gripping tightly into the fleshy part of either arm open just long enough to slip through, even as others from a nearby island nation were welcomed, feet wet or dry from their escapes. But this is the story of the United States, a country of conundrum, land of the free, and home of the brave with an asterisk. Only if you are white. As we watched Trump lie blatantly in our faces, only to later refuse to concede defeat, and folks in Michigan and Arizona chant, "Stop the count," I could not comprehend his mind-boggling phenomenon. This couldn't possibly be happening in the United States, a democratic republic that is ruled by the people, if the definitions are to be believed. How fragile is democracy in this country that so many people who consider themselves to be true patriots would call for the very undemocratic silencing of their fellow citizens? And if the United States doesn't have its democracy, what does it have? Our governing principle has been touted as superior above all else. Some have even called it exceptional. It has been used as a way to make other countries subservient to almighty America, particularly as we occupy other nations, claiming that we know best. We know democracy, justice, peace, all that is good. Still, we have lost face to the entire world. But this is far from surprising. While immigrants vying for American citizenship are quizzed on the intricacies of the United States system of government, colonial history, geography, flag symbolism, and more, two-thirds of American citizens would fail the same exam. And when we are empowered with knowledge about the fundamentals of the country we inhabit, our textbooks are revised to paint a wholly inaccurate picture. I am a firm believer of the adage, if you don't know where you have been, you won't know where you are headed. And as folks cheer Black people as a prime factor in the redemption of America's soul this election, they forgot that African Americans have always been the guardians of this country's democracy. Those unalienable rights enumerated in the Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for all, were just words on parchment, until Black Americans rallied for their freedom as human beings. But here we are today, watching this nation fail an open book test. History is repeating itself, and some people, and let's be specific here, some white people are determined to fail it with flying colors. Look how countless white people have aligned themselves with the disenfranchisement of even more marginalized groups. The hard-won dignity that Black people fought to establish, the foundational blocks of many social justice movements, is under constant duress. Don't folks see how this relentless persecution of people undermines the democracy they claim to love and instead ushers in its demise? The United States is failing an open book test. I remember the days of my youth when I so naively thought racism would come to an end once the older generation died out. But nearly half of young white voters between the ages of 18 through 29 chose an undisputed bigot for president. White America's refusal to acknowledge the lasting impact of slavery and the insidious ways racism continues to manifest in today's world is at the root. Of course, we could take a look at the 8% of Black, 28% of Asian, or 35% of Latinx voters, respectively, who voted for Trump. But when the total amount of people from these groups who voted for Biden and Trump only accounts for 23% of the total share of votes, we would be better served focusing on the majority and save them from another essay. Those unalienable rights enumerated in the Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for all were just words on parchment until Black Americans rallied for their freedoms as human beings. Yet the question remains, where do we go from here? We must commit to viewing the United States with a critical eye, not because we wish her harm or want to sow division, but because we love her, because we are here, because we want the better future that remains possible for some but eternally elusive for others. And that requires uncomfortable conversations that have too long been avoided. We need white people who claim to be allies to hold their family, friends, and loved ones accountable and not expect a pat on the back from Black people for doing the right thing. We need to reclaim our humanity and decency. This country should not be united in name only. So what does the 2020 election reveal about America's democracy? It is fragile and delicate, and we must watch over it with extreme care. Safeguarding it will require us to take a look at ourselves and recognize the dips and cracks in our flawed society. It is not too late to create the change we so desperately need. Maybe I'm more optimistic than I realized. Maika Mollett, the author of this article, is co-author of One of Those Good Ones, a young adult novel that tackles generational racial trauma, allyship, and sisterhood, and a communication, culture, and media studies PhD student at Howard University. One of the Good Ones is out January 5th, 2021 from HarperCollins Imprint, Ink Yard Press. The next article is titled, The Art of Joy, Secrets from Some of the Happiest Black Women We Know. With the end of the year finally in sight, we must admit that 2020 was a lot to bear. The COVID-19 pandemic and its subsequent life-changing fallout brought so many Black people to their emotional limits. Yet we came together as resilient Black women often do. We grasped at every opportunity to infuse more happiness into our daily routines, like gardening, exercising, meditating, and dancing, and began to recenter the conversation around our collective pursuit of happiness. To help you stay inspired, we called upon four women whose joy breaks make us smile. Here, they share how they carved out their personal path to peace in 2020. The Art of Connection with Danielle Brooks. For actress Danielle Brooks, Orange is the New Black, 2019 ended on an ultimate high note when she welcomed her first child, Freya Carell, into the world on November 16th. She kicked off this year with more great news, announcing a surprise New Year's Eve engagement to Dennis Gielen. During an Essence Yes Girl podcast interview in Los Angeles back in February, Brooks glowed as she recounted the joys of motherhood and her career-making turn on the hit Netflix show. She was booked and busy and feeling very blessed. A month later, the pandemic stopped the world, and like so many, Brooks struggled to adjust to our new reality. "This year was probably the hardest time for me to hold on to joy," she says. "I have been searching for ways to keep that in my wheelhouse all year, and it has been very, very difficult." To get there, Brooks journaled, listened to God, cooked more, and held her family closer. In the process, she found clarity, new perspective, and hope. "I'm starting to redefine where my joy comes from, and for me, it is rooted in family, friends, and memories," she explains. Not being on the set for months gave Brooks, 31, more time at home with baby Freya. "She started walking," Brooks gushes. "I got to catch her in my arms. I got to see all of these incredible milestones. To hear her say, 'Mama,' for the first time, I didn't think I was going to get to experience them. It's been really, really wonderful." As Brooks bonded with her baby girl and focused on self-care, it wasn't lost on her that 2020's tough news cycle highlighted the challenges Black parents in America face. "It is really hard when you are raising a Black child," she says. But Brooks turned that pain into fuel to keep moving forward. "All of us new mothers or new papas with babies, we can contribute by the way we raise our children to making a better world." That new mama tribe Brooks speaks of certainly helped to hold her down this year too. "I would not have been able to do this without other mothers," she says. Crediting the love and support from fellow actresses and new mom friends Raven Goodwin and Jodie Turner Smith with helping her stay calm, "I am leaning into the hope that Freya and all of our children can truly be that change we need." The Art of Giving with Tabitha Brown. Well, hello there. If you relied on social media to distract you from 2020's rocky emotional twist, then that catchphrase is most likely a favorite already, because it is one of the many that bubbly online sensation and vegan cook Tabitha Brown, 41, used daily to greet her millions of dedicated followers as she comforted them through these unprecedented times. For Brown, an aspiring actress who lives with her husband and kids in Los Angeles, food has always been a love language. "It's how I take care of my family," she says. "I feed them." Becoming a vegan saved Brown after a mystery health scare that left her weak and constantly feeling ill. Now she's fueling what she believes is God's purpose for her life, teaching others about the benefits of living a vegan lifestyle, one short feel-good how-to video at a time. When the pandemic hit, Brown's infectiously warm energy and delicious vegan tricks had millions of fans turning into her feeds, eager for a cyber seat at her family table. Now the internet is collectively obsessed with this joy evangelist, whose positivity comes with encouragement and advice for those who need their spirits lifted. Brown gets it because she's been there, having had their own bout with anxiety and panic attacks. "I promised myself, if I get through, if God brought me through, I would do my best to try to be the light for other people who may be suffering," she recalls. Her secret is simple. Find and do what works for you. Other people may look and think it's crazy, but eventually it brings you joy, says Brown. Just like me naming my hair Donna, right? It has brought so many people joy, but it brings me so much joy when I am in the bathroom picking her out and I'm having a whole conversation. The Art of Self-Care with Devi Brown. When 2020 went left, wellness expert Devi Brown, 35, asks herself one question amid the chaos. Who am I being called to become right now? While many were daydreaming about going back outside, Brown was getting even more at home with herself and looking deeper within. The thing about this year that I think we have all begun to realize is that 2020 is the year of illumination, says Brown, a Chopra certified practitioner of primordial sound meditation. It's shining light in all dark spots. The former broadcaster's devotion to spiritual wellness is a second act in her life, birthed from the burnout she felt in her successful radio career. Her wellness mindset really came in handy when the pandemic struck because she already understood the great power of happiness and had insights on how to heal. I think what's so important about the healing journey in general is not to run from dark, she explains. You don't have to know how to fix yourself every step of the way. You don't have to heal in a way that's Instagrammable or beautiful. The truth is, sometimes getting serious about self-care can seem a little daunting, which is why Brown's down-to-earth, quote-unquote, there are no wrong ways approach to mindfulness was such a breath of fresh air for those who could barely breathe this year. If you want to access more happiness, Brown recommends you cut yourself some slack. We are expected to feel happiness only with grand gestures or big things that are comparable to other people's experiences. But joy is a state of everything being enough, says Brown, who, in addition to being a wellness coach, is a doting wife and toddler mom. Just an enoughness. I am enough. I am worthy. That is joyous. This moment that I'm existing in, though it may not be ideal, it's enough for now because I'm trusting that it's for my highest good. I'm trusting that it is leading and guiding me somewhere. With the outside world in such disarray, Brown has also made sure that she found peace in the little things inside and around her space by filling her home with plants, her yard with wind chimes, and her spirit with good vibes only. It was like, whoa, life is still beautiful anyway, she reflects, and life is still growing and changing and moving anyway. And none of this stuff that we put stock into is actually real. None of it matters. We have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Ava Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.